Welcome to the Coffee Cast with Stephen Hayward of Project X. Hopefully over a good cup of coffee, we're going to have a great conversation. So please join us to welcome this week's guest on the Coffee Cast. Welcome to this week's episode of the Coffee Cast with Steve Hayward of Project X. I'm back together with Tim Matthews, the co-founder, VP of Marketing of IPEDO. Welcome back, Tim.
Thanks. Good to be back again.
Yeah, so we are back together because we ended up chatting about a topic that I love, which is podcasting and video blogging and just blogging in general. And I don't know how we got onto it. Maybe I was just talking about the fact that I got a new Mac and I was running virtualized XP on my Mac. And somehow we ended up talking about some of the things that are the new emerging trends for enterprise information integration and virtualization. So maybe before we jump into the topic that brought us back, you could kind of maybe do a little recap on what's new since we last chatted, and then we'll jump into that.
Sure, I'd be happy to. So as you probably remember, and as you introduced, IPEDO is an enterprise information integration company. And whenever people ask, you know, what does that mean exactly, the simplest description of it is we create virtual databases. So we take combinations of other databases, which could be all over the place, and make them appear locally as a single database instance, you know, virtually to the application. And what's interesting is that, you know, this whole concept is gaining steam, which is why we're talking about this, but also as people move toward web services, the whole concept of having a data service that's available anywhere is really gaining momentum in the market. And people are really starting to not only explore those, but actually put them into practice.
Mm-hmm. I know we were chatting and I mentioned I just finished doing an upgrade of a master data management system. And one of the challenges that I found in it was that it was a very nice service-oriented architecture, but at the expense of the database layer. It was really kind of complex.
Right.
And that's one of the things that we got going into it. But tell me, how are things going? Lots of adoption. I know that this is going to be a slow process because you're kind of leading the market and creating it as you go.
Right. Things are going well. Our technology has progressed. You know, we just made a big announcement around our ability to not only virtualize over relational databases, but over XML, something called XQuery, which just became an official standard just a few weeks ago, which is now, as you may know, part of Oracle and Viper. So the nice thing for us is that we're able to virtualize over anything, really, in combinations thereof. And, you know, we see a lot of interest in this kind of technology, especially in big banks and insurance companies, and some in high-tech manufacturing. And then we're seeing a lot of interest in Asia. We have our Asian headquarters in Shanghai. And that's going like crazy. So generally speaking, things are good. And I think that, you know, last year in 2006, really people started implementing SOA. Mm-hmm. And I think as people started doing that, they realized that they couldn't ignore the data layer, which you were alluding to before.
Yeah.
And that's bringing people our way.
So, I mean, one of the challenges, and I know if Graham were here, my business partner, he'd be talking about, you know, the issue with virtualization is that you're still moving data around, and if you're taking big table joins across a virtual world, you're still having to move all the data. Tell me about that experience and what that means, especially in a virtualized world, because I love the idea of, you know, everything's hidden to the end user.
Right. Yeah, so there's a couple aspects to that. First of all, I wrote something yesterday in my blog about the temperature of data, which I'd seen written about by Dan Lindstedt from the BI network.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about, you know, hot data, warm data, cold data, right? And he actually has lukewarm data in there somewhere. And so it's a very simple concept, but, you know, the point is that, you know, you're not going to necessarily virtualize your hot data, right? If you need it, if you need sub-second access, you probably want to have that local or in a dedicated database. But there's certain other data that is, you know, warm or lukewarm that, you know, only requires, you know, 1 second to 10 second response time. That's easily handled by EII. So the first point is try and pick an appropriate set of data or type of data for EII. You know, we're not saying that you should, you know, ditch your data warehouse or your data mart necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is getting to your question or your partner's objection about, you know, large joints, the magic of EII is that in the case that there is a large join, what we actually do is we actually push the joins down to the source databases. And so you're not actually moving large sets of data. The ultimate goal is to move small result sets. Right?
Okay.
So, and you do that both by not being an ETL job, you know, moving it from point A to point B. And the second part is you try and, you know, achieve the subqueries and push the queries down to the source databases. So in many cases, they are being joined by the databases that have the data locally, so you're not moving it anywhere. It's even better than ETL because you're not moving the data.
Yeah.
And you're just getting the result back from the database.
So it also helps you fight the whole issue around all the ETL gurus that have control about data movement who would be fighting you before,
sure,
saying you're trying to take what we do and, you know, we're using a data stage or an Informatica or whatever it might be, which is industrial strength in our corporate standard.
Right. Yeah, I think when I've seen some interesting, you know, charts. It used to be, you know, you had 5 or 10 databases and you pushed all that data into one data warehouse, right? And now you have these graphs where you have, you know, 50 different databases and the data is moving all over the place. Some to A, some to B, some to C, C to D, D to E, subsets thereof moving on to G. And so it's a very complex process right now with all these ETL jobs. And some of that is necessary, but not all of it's necessary. And especially for anything service-oriented, reporting-oriented, anything that changes frequently, where the data subsets you're moving around are changing a lot because the reports change because users want new things.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing people should think about virtualizing. And I would say to any ETL guru, you know, if you understand ETL, you can understand, you know, EII, data virtualization. You know, add it into your bag of tricks. There's no reason you can't do that.
Well, one of the big challenges I've seen with moving a lot of data in large enterprise or organizations is that when you're using your standard ETL products, when you schedule that move to be done on a batch job, which is usually what happens, you are often creating latency and a whole bunch of dependencies on data being moved from one place to one place before you start moving it out.
Right.
And we've run into a lot of problems around that data latency issue and even just trying to time when you do a batch job that ultimately may put you 3 days behind getting a piece of information that you should be able to get real time.
Right. And that's where the whole concept of virtualization comes in. You know, would it be more appropriate in some cases, especially if you're running some kind of reporting application or a dashboard, where wouldn't it be more appropriate to just virtualize the data layer and allow people to just change essentially metadata definitions to where the data is coming from and not have to wait for data to move around because you're doing it, you know, live, typically smaller amounts of data than you'd be moving into a data warehouse. But it just seems like a more enlightened strategy. And I think as people have become used to the concept of virtualization on the PC, virtualization of the data center, this whole idea of virtualizing databases is, you know, we're kind of moving up the stack, becoming more and more appealing to people.
Yeah, and even, I mean, just people getting used to the use of proper view management and things like that. I mean, if I was doing a major, so I'm wondering why banks and insurance companies seem to be the big adopters, early adopters. And
right.
I guess maybe if I'm doing system consolidation and evolution, if I have an EII layer, just like we used to do with the apps layer in EAI, if I have something above that, then ultimately if I've integrated to that, what happens to the data underneath is transparent. So if I end up choosing to centralize the data, that doesn't hurt the EII layer. You're just going to say I'm not going from as many data sources.
Right.
So it's an interesting thing. So why do you think the banks and insurance companies are such early adopters and interested in it?
Yeah, there's a couple reasons for that I see. One is that especially the large banks have thousands, if not tens of thousands, of databases. And so the data is all over the place, in many cases geographically distributed. And they need to have consolidated views for various different common applications like figuring out risk positions or figuring out fraud detection or just simply joining accounts for large customers that have a consolidation of products needed for a statement. That's one reason. And related to that is, in many cases, they're not allowed to move certain types of data for various regulatory reasons. So moving it's not necessarily an option for them. So EI presents the opportunity, and I suppose it's semantics, but they're allowed to read it but not copy it.
Mm-hmm.
So they're allowed to see it and get what they need without actually having to, create and own and have governance over the actual, master database.
But it's nice because that abstract layer that EII brings, and I know we talked about this in our first discussion, it allows you to really strongly control who gets access to that new view of the data, that virtual view. With it, obviously the whoever's engineering it has to know and understand the governance rules.
Right.
But
that's kind of in the background where people are thinking, this might be a nice way to enforce governance, like you're suggesting.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're very concerned about what might be out there in some database they may or may not even know about. And the last thing, just to get back to your original question, is that there's a strong push toward web services in banks and insurance companies in particular. I think banks, because they're typically more cutting edge and feeds of information, is the common paradigm in a bank. So I think it fits with their paradigm. Insurance companies, interestingly, I had always thought to be somewhat of technology laggards in general. However, I think because of the legacy systems, a lot of older systems in insurance companies, and because insurance companies now are moving more and more online, because more and more of their business is happening over the web as opposed to the local insurance agent, web services is a way they can move from these legacy systems, the AS400s and mainframes, to the web directly, which is really the only way to do it efficiently. And so because of that move to SOA, they obviously have lots of data that they need to actually move and consult. So that's why data services and virtualization is really taking off in insurance.
So let's talk about the virtualization. I mean, we're not necessarily talking about the same way you would truly talk about VMware doing virtualization, where you're creating a virtual instance of a system. You're
right.
Actually creating a layer that creates that virtualization of where the data lives.
That's right. I mean, generally speaking, there are two kinds of virtualization: platform virtualization, which is what VMware does,
yeah,
and resource virtualization. So we're talking about the latter, which is resource virtualization. But generally speaking, virtualization is just an abstraction layer. So from that perspective, a data services layer is the same thing, right? It's abstracting the databases underneath, presenting a uniform layer on top of them, just as or similar to a JVM or a virtual machine provides a layer on top of an operating system. So they have that in common. Obviously, your goals for having virtualization on your PC or your server are a bit different. You might want to have multiple operating systems or multiple applications as guests on your single server. In the case of database or data virtualization, you don't necessarily get that platform savings, although there is the opportunity to consolidate databases over time. What you're really getting are some of the other benefits that come with virtualization, which is more flexibility and the ability for better management of your information. And that's why, generally speaking, virtualization is very popular in IT shops these days.
Well, I'll give you an example. We're working on a project right now where there was a major operations system that got moved, and they moved to a completely different platform, and the underlying nature of the data was changing quite dramatically.
Right.
And there was basically a day that all of a sudden it said, from instead of this system working, it's now this new system. And there were all these reports and downstream feeds that basically got shut off.
Right.
You could have, in theory, for the short term, put in an EII layer that could have mirrored that, that allowed you to do that mapping underneath the covers, that it didn't matter to those end users. And all the reports and all the ETL would have been able to stay there. And it would have even if you ended up shooting that layer as you went and evolved and changed all that complex code, you would have actually been able to keep business as usual in a fairly fast manner.
That's right. You hit the nail on the head. I mean, say, there's all kinds of examples of this. You want to migrate from Sybase to DB2, or you want to take advantage of MySQL's new enterprise pricing, so you want to move from Oracle to MySQL, but you can't do it all at once.
Mm-hmm.
Or you want to replace a database with a web service. So if you have this insulating layer in place, really it involves some of the IT staff just doing some remapping.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some intricacies, but we have tools to handle some of that stuff. So you're right, you can insulate the end user from having to care And you know what? They really don't care.
Well, the funniest thing is when you're moving the data, you're ending up doing that mapping anyway when you have to move your historical data to this new system.
Right.
So largely that mapping work is done. It may not be to the level that you need it for operating point of view, but you know, you've got all that work. You're not trying to create this new amount of work. And if you look at the level of expense of moving all of those external feeds, one of the things we've always talked about here at Project X is the actual true cost of an enterprise data warehouse and data marts and all that other stuff isn't in the base platform, whether it's Oracle or Teradata. It's actually in how the cost of moving data. And so to your point, if I choose for business reasons to move to a different database structure because of whatever that is, it's not the cost of moving the database. It's all that connection to the outside world.
Yeah.
And it's massive.
It's true. And even, you know, a simple case is, you know, that there's so much data, you can't move it all in your overnight window, but you want the reports to be working. So you could even do something with EI where you move half the data and, you know, one, the customer table moves and the product table stays. And then you just, you know, have the new view span the two until you're done.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just move the product data into the other target database. So you're able to do all kinds of stuff like that. And gives the IT department a lot of flexibility in how they want to move the data and when they want to do it.
Have you guys thought about virtualizing the historical data versus operational data problem? So one of the things when you get into big enterprise data warehouses is after a certain point, they archive all that historical data.
Yeah.
And seldom, but sometimes they actually need to get access to the historical data, but it's not, as you talked about, in terms of that that data hot, cold, or lukewarm. It's not often, but one of the things that's really painful is if you end up having to do that, how do you then go back and get that data if it's archived? You have to load it all back in and all that stuff. One of the things that we've been looking at, there's a product of a company that's up here in Canada that's come up with some algorithm to basically have a productionized version of historical data that's all compressed and all that stuff. The challenge that we had and presented to them was, well, if I need to do a query on it, yes, I can query it, but how do I join that to my existing queries?
Right.
And if you could go and say, all I need to do is modify my view to include being able to look at this historical view data when I need to add it, it would make it a lot more simple.
Yeah, I mean, and if you look at the, you know, the size of a view, right, and the metadata, it's probably less than a K on our server.
Mm-hmm.
The reason you couldn't keep a historical join like that sitting around for when you might need it, maybe you need it once a year at audit time or, you know, whatever the business need is, but it's basically free to keep that view around, and then when you need to join it, you can just go ahead and do that join as you would with the operational data or the other data in your company. So again, it allows you to, and this kind of gets back to virtualization, you know, they may decide to archive the data on really cheap hardware.
And that's the point, right? Like,
right?
Disk space is cheap, right? Nowadays, I can go and buy, you know, massive server with lots of hard drive space, and I don't really need to worry about compression technology or any of that stuff.
Exactly. Exactly. So, again, that's another thing you can do with EI is, you know, start looking at the use patterns and moving the, you know, the cold data over to cheap hardware, and then just join it when you need it. And, you know, if it turns out that, you know, once a year, you know, after the Christmas season or during tax time, whatever the case might be, a lot of people need access to that very quickly, then just cache it, right? Just cache the view on the EI server, and then when you're done, just flush it, right? But keep the view definition around for next year when you need it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, these are the kinds of very common, you know, business needs where, sure, I suppose I could buy a new database, new hardware, set up a new ETL job, but, you know, why would you do that, right? It's not going to solve your problem. It's just, you know, the old expression, when you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail,
mm-hmm.
right? Pick up a new tool, right? Think about EI as a new way to approach these kinds of problems.
Yeah, I'm as bad as the next guy about that.
Yeah, and I think honestly there was some pushback around EI because people misunderstood it, right? It's going to replace ETL or it's going to replace data warehouse, and that was somewhat misguided. I think when you talk about virtualization, I mean, database virtualization, people can see this whole area in a new light. Like, okay, I get it now. You're not really talking about getting rid of my data warehouse. You're not talking about getting rid of ETL. You're talking about allowing certain data to be virtualized as needed.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, ultimately, and we joke about it here, is there's a big pendulum about centralization versus decentralization.
Right.
And it goes on all the time. And
right.
You're not going to win that battle on a regular basis because there's a case that can be made by anybody who's smart either way.
Right.
So, you know, the thing that's interesting about this virtualization kind of position is that this is, says, I don't really care.
Yeah.
You know, good for you. Fight the battle.
Right. I mean, you put the layer in place, and in some ways you can hide everything you're doing underneath if you want to. So if you want to, you know, buy 2,000 MySQL servers, go for it. If you want to add some more nodes to your Teradata, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But the end users don't have to care.
Yeah. And, I mean, the thing I'm finding is so let's go say I have a new division. I'm an insurance company, bought a new, so I think one of our insurance companies just bought a big fund management company in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Now you want to integrate all that stuff, but you don't want to stop having those people be able to operate the way they were operating before. And
right.
So how can you do that in a cost-effective manner, but still
right.
get your cost savings of sharing platforms and centralization? And, you know, there's lots of ways to do it. And I certainly find that layer that you're talking about really gives some options from a data point of view.
That's right. And, you know, they could even use it as a migration tool, right? You know, you could actually buy this stuff and use it for 6 months until you're finished with your centralization, for example. And it would still provide you value and save you money as opposed to, you know, buying all the new databases and having to move it all over and all the people to do that.
Well, but if you did it and you made it so that, just like we talked about that operation system move, so let's say that this company one has all their systems to work a certain way, and you're not necessarily going to be able to change all of those operating systems,
mm-hmm.
but we want to centralize the data just because that's just the corporate standard.
Right.
Well, you can still centralize it all, but you're just moving the views over to point to a different data source when you go to make the centralization. So it gives you lots of time as opposed to trying to rush to hit this target window when everything has, the switch gets turned over.
That's right. And I should point out for anyone who's, you know, cynical about this, I mean, you know, the state of EI and data virtualization is pretty sophisticated. I mean, you can, you know, pass through stored procedures and things of that nature down specific to whatever the target database might be, whether it's Oracle, DB2, what have you. So you can do those complex functions, but if you, for example, wanted to move from Oracle to MySQL because you want to save money eventually, but you can't do it in 6 months or a year because it'd be too disruptive.
Yeah.
Then think of this as a migration strategy that allows you to do that, and you can kind of knock off the databases one by one, right? You don't have to do it all in one big bang.
Well, and I mean, ultimately, it just gives you a platform for flexibility. It's not about just being a migration strategy and pulling it out when you're done.
Right.
You just leave it there, and as far as the end users are concerned, they don't really see anything.
Right.
So if it ends up being a straight pass of data and this abstraction layer doesn't need to be doing anything, then that's fine too.
Right.
But also, I mean, I think that hidden gem of your statement of if you can move some of the query work even at that virtualization level down to the databases, that's a little bit of added value that's even above it.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, you could pass it straight through, you can cache it, you can have the EI layer do the work for you. It, again, gives you, you know, different strategies depending on what the data happens to be. And there might be stuff where it's too much, and you might need a dedicated database and a, you know, ETL or ELT product, and that's fine.
There's lots of room in the enterprise.
We were talking to a bank recently, they had 50,000 of just one kind of database in their company. I mean, it's staggering numbers.
One of our clients has, you know, that same order of magnitude of ETL jobs. And you go, well, how do you know when they're running to be able to know what your latency is and be able to map it? And we started talking about doing a lot of mind mapping to mapping systems and jobs and timelines and trying to truly figure out where the latency of the data is.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
And it's a challenge, right? And that's not going to go away. That all exists. That those 50,000 jobs all are there.
Right.
No one's going to go and flip a switch tomorrow and say, hey, let's just stop doing all that.
Right. Exactly. And likewise, you know, I mean, look, getting back to PC virtualization, I mean, it's not as far as I know, slowing down the sales of PCs and Intel-based servers. If anything, it's probably just, you know, allowing people to buy more of them and use them in a more effective way.
Well, hey, I'm loving my new Mac. And and I sit here, and the last 3 days I've been running it, and other than basically this conversation using GarageBand, and just because it's a better tool for this, so far I've been running it like a PC on XP, so it's just a nice platform.
Yeah, amazing.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you taking the time, and certainly enjoyed the conversation as I did the last time we got together.
Likewise.
Any other kind of interesting messages, any tidbits of things you're looking to do from a sharing the message point of view?
Well, you know, we are going to start doing more and more, you know, podcasts and online demos around this concept. And from a product standpoint, you know, we're going to look now at making our product more intelligent in terms of understanding where the data flows are going to and coming from, to give people a better picture when they do decide to virtualize of what their options are.
Mm-hmm.
Try and make the EI layer more of an advisor to basically, you know, take the information about the queries, query times, usage patterns, and present that back to the administrators so they know that they could actually do certain things. So kind of a smart virtualization layer that will give people some options in terms of how and where and when to do the virtualization.
Interesting.
So
that'll be an interesting evolution, especially when you start talking about each one of those tools underneath, whether DBT, Oracle, whatever, all have generally different types of ways of monitoring those things.
Exactly. I mean, and that's, you know, if you think, if it's a very loose analogy, but think about the hypervisor in the virtualization world. Well, think about kind of a data advisor, so to speak, at the EI layer that tells you, you know, here are your usage patterns, here's how often these kind of queries are being run, here's who's running them, you know, here's some options for moving data to slower storage or slower machines, here are some redundancies, that kind of stuff. And then I think people are going to really start to see the value, kind of smack them in the head of this kind of, you know, virtualization layer using AI. So stay tuned for that.
Cool. Well, thank you very much.
All right, likewise.
For more information about Project X, please join us on our website at www.pxltd.ca or hop on our blog and join in the conversation at pxltd.typepad.com. This is a copyright of Project X Limited. Thank you for joining us today.